Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to KingScottRadioTV.com. We are here to talk with Miss Jenkins of Johnson & Jenkins Funeral Home. Say hello to your audience, Miss Jenkins.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for having me today, sir.
You are so welcome. Can we start out with you just giving us your address and your phone number and what area that you operate in?
Sure. It's Johnson & Jenkins Funeral Home, 716 Kennedy Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C. The number is 202-882-8800, and we're in the Upper Northwest Brightwood Park area.
Okay. Ms. Jenkins, how long have you all been in business?
Oh, my gosh. The company was founded by my great-uncle Fred Jenkins and Mr. Johnson. I don't know his name. I never met him. He passed before I was even born, but it was about in like 1937, I want to say.
And you have been in control of the funeral home for how long now?
I became basically owner when my father passed in 2010.
Okay, this is a great start. I would want to know and want the audience to know that you have been in this business for quite some time. Now, you also was a teacher at the University of District of Columbia?
No, I was a student. I wish I could teach there. I was a student at the University of the District of Columbia. I'm on the accreditation board for the Department of Mortuary Science. But I've never been a teacher, much to my chagrin.
Well, talk about the accreditation, because I don't think people understand what goes into being a funeral director and also running a business.
The accreditation is one thing, and that's just making sure that the school meets the standards that, and I honestly can't remember off the top of my head the name of the board, but the standards set for mortuary science schools. The University of District of Columbia has one of the best, I believe, programs, one of the most extensive labs for embalming and learning your craft, embalming, cosmetology, restorative art. And it's just a good program all the way around, and they're very, right now they're rebuilding, vetting students, and we're just looking for the best. We're looking for the best. As far as becoming a funeral director, the program, and it's changed since I've been in school, but it's a two-year program. It took me 3 years because it's very intensive. You take the university requirements, and then you take the mortuary requirements, which are your sciences, anatomy, chemistry, micro, embalming, restorative art. So it's a lot. It's a lot.
Are you still actively involved with that process?
Not right now. I am still on the accreditation board and attend the meetings. I would like to, again, you mentioned me teaching, and I just don't have enough degrees, unfortunately, but I would love to be able to teach students, you know, all the facets, management, embalming, again, restorative art in mortuary science. I would love to be able to do that, but I think I'm too old and too tired to go back to school.
Now, your daughter is also a part of that mechanism. Can you talk about what she does and how she operates within the business?
Okay, I am third generation, so she is fourth generation. My father was second and, again, founded by my great uncle, who was first generation. And basically, it's just following the lineages of the business and keeping it in the Jenkins family. So she's learning, again, just like I did, by working every day, management, and what it all entails to run a business. It's not just the funeral side, there's a whole lot to this. And I was blessed, I was honestly blessed to have been able to work with my dad for almost 30 years. So wow. I learned from the best. I absolutely learned from the best.
So in terms of the future of Johnson & Jenkins, how do you foresee that going forward now?
Oh, I pray every day that it stays within the family. I have grandchildren coming up who some have expressed some interest, and I'm letting them, you know, come into it slowly and see if they really like to do it. So I hope it's around for generations to come. I really do. I know my parents, both of my parents, sacrificed and worked very hard for these, and I'm praying that we can keep it going in their memory.
So in terms of what do you see on the horizon within the business of death, because it is an actual business. There's a business side of it, and you've been operating on that side of it. What do you see in the future? How is it changing or evolving?
Wow, that's a whole long conversation. It has changed a lot since when I first started working with my dad. It was you buried in a family. You know, like, let's say at some point you buried grandma and granddad, then you buried the parents and the children, and it went down that night. Now people do more shopping, you know, which I understand because this is an expensive world to live in. I really try to talk to clients, especially when they come in, excuse me, my age and younger, about pre-planning. Because I can remember working with my dad and a cemetery plot in one of the cemeteries in the area was $300, $400, $500. Now you can't get in for under
$10,000. Wow.
So I try, yes. So I try to tell people, you know, when you're doing your spouse, when you're doing this for this person, buy your plot now because they go up every year. And when you buy a plot, you're looking at the grave. You're looking at the opening and closing of the grave. The cemetery requires you to have a vault. You have a perpetual care. There's a lot to it. So pre-need is usually cheaper than at-need, okay? And sometimes cemeteries have specials. So, it's, you know, check with whatever your cemetery of choice. But right now, these cemeteries are cost more than funerals. So I try to... Nobody wants to think about death. Nobody wants to talk about it, but it is inevitable for every single one of us on this planet. So in that you think you've left somebody $50,000 insurance, $100,000, well, you've spent about $25,000 on a funeral.
Hmm.
And I'm sure that's not your intent. So if you can pre-plan, because once it's paid for, you are locked into that price. They can charge you no more. That's how the law is now. I can't tell you what the future holds. But once it's paid for, that's it. All your family has to do is present, you know, my mom, my dad, whoever, my husband's wife. This is the contract. They have a plot here, and it's done. It's done.
So,
Same with funerals.
So what would be the appropriate age to begin to look at this process, seeing that, I mean, you live and you die. So what would be the appropriate age that you would recommend for a family, a young family, to start looking at this aspect that's going to happen eventually?
You know, that's a very good question. I would think maybe in your 30s, you know, no later than 40s, when you start having children, when you've gotten used to paying your mortgage and things like that, because it is, it is, as some people might consider, extra money, but I think it's very important because I see a lot of times people are, you know, you don't do this every day. And I buried my grandmother at XYZ Cemetery in 1990-something. Well, 1990-something, it was $2,000. Now it's $10,000.
Mm.
Nobody had four planning. Yeah, now it's $10,000. So I would say, you know, at least make sure you have insurance enough to cover this because, again, think you're leaving somebody something and the majority of it is spent on a funeral, a cemetery, you know, you haven't accomplished what your goal was, to make things easier for those you love.
So around 30-ish is when you...
Yeah, I'd say 30, 35, no later than 40.
And so this process, do you make a down payment? How do you structure that payment? And then how do you guide it so that, because a lot of it is trust, because you're putting money away for something that's going to happen, but then you say, well, I'm too young to worry about this. I mean, the generations have changed in their obligations to do the right thing. So what would you say to a person, how much they should be setting aside to take care of this?
Okay, first, let me say this. It is a modicum of trust involved. There are mandatory pre-arrangement accounts. Now, I cannot tell you about the cemetery, how they operate, because they operate, I believe, under a different umbrella. But once you sign either one, if you do it with the funeral home or you do it with the cemetery, you do have a contract. For the funeral home, again, I can't speak on the cemetery. The contract is irrevocable, which means once you sign it, technically, you know, it can't be canceled. And then the funeral home is reporting, you know, recording the monies paid in a separate account. Okay?
So
now for the cemetery, go ahead. No, go ahead.
So this way segue into what your facility offers in terms of the setup, how you accommodate, because usually this is a very emotional time and we're trying to prepare the future of a must be, this must happen. So within your facility, you have basically a one shop stop.
Mm-hmm.
So can you give us a description? Because within what we're going to talk about, you have everything available to you to satisfy a customer, which in my opinion would put you over top of some of the other places that I'm aware of. And because I'm in the ministry, I'm aware of different, I'm going to use the word scams that are out there, because it can be a slimy business. So in your facility, what is it that you offer that puts you above the rest of the other people that are there?
I think what separates any business is the level of service. And we service our clientele from the minute they walk in the door until after the funeral is over, and any time after that. Most people have my cell number. They call me personally, you know, if they need something, and I have no problem with that. I try to be fair. I don't try to sell what you don't need. It doesn't do me any good if you can't pay for it, and me any good if I can't get paid. So I try to give people economical value for the dollars that they're spending and trusting their loved one to us.
So what would that look like in terms of you selling something that they don't need? Can you give us an example of what that would be? Because they don't know.
Like a casket you can't afford. Caskets come in levels, like anything else. Like, I'm trying to do a good analogy, like maybe cars. So you have, you know, your lower-end caskets, which are still reputable, usable metal caskets, going up all the way to bronze. Now, I'm not going to try to get you to pay, you know, $30,000 for a bronze casket when you don't have $30,000 for bronze worth of casket money, and then having to remember that you have to live after this funeral. You know, this funeral is definitely a representation of your respect and your love for the person that you love who is deceased, but I'm sure they leave you that money because after they're gone, you still have to live. So I try to do something that is appropriate, dignified, but also something that you can afford that's not going to hurt or harm you.
So in terms of caskets specifically, all of the caskets seal basically the same way. So would that be a stickler point whether a casket is going to be sealed or whether it's going to leak? First of all, you never... It's rare that you have to redo a casket for leakage, right?
Not that I have a doubt, but it's very funny because to some people that's important. Some people, they want a casket that seals and then vault seal. There are two types of, first let me get to the outer burial containers, which is a, grave liner and a vault. A grave liner is a concrete box that is put into the ground to house the casket in the cemetery. Concrete liners don't seal. Vaults, however, do seal. And they even come in levels. They even come, you can go up to a bronze vault. So it just depends on what you want. Some people, that matters to them, whether anything can get into the casket once it's placed in the ground, be it air, water, bugs, anything. Some people it does not matter to. So that's the difference between getting a sealer and a non-sealer. Not all caskets seal. Some caskets are non-sealer. Same thing. Then that means water can get into them, air. Some caskets are sealers, which means once you close it, it is hermetically sealed, and nothing should be able to get inside of it once it's closed. So it just comes down to your preference. It really does.
I see. So you get started around 30-ish, and
I would.
What would be the time frame that you would put on to accomplish what a person's goals are?
I mean, it depends. If you pay, sometimes you can only pay what you have. And when you get, as you get older and maybe your disposable income increases, you can add more. Some people will use their insurance. The only thing with insurance is, again, until it's paid for, it's not locked in. So you might plan, okay, as it's trending now, I live another 30, 40 years, the cemetery is going to be XYZ, the funeral is going to be XYZ. So I need to get an insurance policy for XYZ amount of dollars so that all of that is covered. Because once it's paid for, it's locked in. But if it's not paid for, then they can charge you the rate at the time you pass.
I see. So I remember there was a case in Clinton, Maryland, where a cemetery was taking the money,
mm-hmm.
but wasn't burying the bodies.
Mm-hmm.
I think that person went to jail
that
for
well.
That.
Mm-hmm.
And that cast a terrible shadow on the whole industry, because
you don't know
what questions to ask. All you know is that you
entrusted your loved one to this person and you expect the job to be done. That's why a lot of families now will wait and see the casket lowered. They wait to see the casket lowered into the ground. They want to make sure their loved one is buried. Mm-hmm.
The other aspect is inside of a vault where there's no... I know my mother and father are in a vault where they bury you above ground because I guess they run out of space in burying people. So now they've put these facilities up where you just slide the case. And is there a distinction between the size of that vault and what's the casket is going to fit in there?
That's a good question. question. These are above ground burials and crypts or mausoleums. Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Crypts?
Okay. Yes.
That, I really am not sure, because some of them do require vaults. Some of them, they have some in-ground burials, too, that the vault is already in the grave. So it just depends on what you purchase.
Okay. So in your facility, you're able to actually conduct a funeral right there without a church?
Oh, yes, sir.
Okay. And every funeral home does not provide that, correct?
Most do. If not, a lot of funeral homes have affiliations with churches they use, but we're blessed. We have a chapel. I have two chapels, actually, Johnson & Jenkins in D.C. and then J.B. Jenkins in Landover. So I try to accommodate either way.
Okay. So in the business of death, to be a wise consumer, would you recommend they come in and talk with you about what their plans are?
Absolutely. Matter of fact, it's something I've been... sad to say, I've been saying for years, because I see so much, especially, and I'm being honest, in our community, of not knowing or not understanding or not being prepared. I would love to get myself a cemetery representative, someone from the courts for the probate process, someone from hospice, an attorney, and sit down and really have major seminars with people. Let them know, and I hope I'm not putting my idea out in the world.
Okay, yeah.
I haven't done it yet. But just to sit down, because, again, and I only serve our community, so I can't speak on any other, but I, after doing this for almost 40 years, sometimes it's very disheartening when you realize what people don't know and how they're not prepared. Simple things, and I've given another seminar on this, simple things like money in the bank. If you don't trust anybody, make your account payable on death. So that way, once they present a death certificate to the bank, if that's the money you choose to bury, use to bury you, then somebody can get it. Change beneficiaries on an insurance. I had many times somebody will remarry and the first spouse is still the beneficiary. He goes, not my problem.
Right.
Not my problem.
Right.
You know, that's your wife. That's your husband. Not my problem.
Wow.
So this things like that, leaving money to minor children, a lot of insurance companies will not release money to minors. Some will, some won't. Depends on who you're insured with. Will not release money to minor children if you had intended on using that for your burial, you know, a portion of it. People had to wait till they're 18. And insurance is governed by the state it's written in. So let's say... Your insurance is with North Carolina Mutual. Well, then insurance is going to follow the laws of the state of North Carolina. So they may say 18, they may say 21. I don't know. But that money won't be released until that child reaches that age.
Well, I think...
So it's a lot... Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying.
I think that it's important that we begin to put that together for the consumer... I mean, we can accredit the idea to you, but I think it's important for people to understand what they're getting involved with, the ins and outs of the business of death, so that they...
Incontestability. People don't realize when you get these insurance policies, I know of old, I don't know of any of the newer ones, but of old, those policies are contestable for 2 years, which means... You're not totally insured until 2 years after the date of the inception of the policy. So you may live 1 year and 5 months. They're only going to pay back what you paid into it and maybe a percentage. Whereas you're thinking once you sign on the dotted line, you're insured for $50,000, not for 2 years.
So in essence, when they see that handsome gentleman that happens to be African-American... talk about the final expenses.
Right.
And he leads them to think, because you thinking that, okay, $25,000 is going to take care of this, and you find out that it's not.
Well, it depends on the company. And I know which one, that commercial you're talking about. They may be. It depends on the company and where the policy was written. But for the most part, I know of old, I've had people, honestly, that made 1 year and 364 days. And they had to fight the insurance company to get paid. If they ever got paid, I don't know. But 1 year, if it's not 2 years, they're not going to pay. So it just depends on, all policies don't have that. It just depends on who your policy is with.
Right. So a person on your side of the fence talking about the other aspects of the business of death, we certainly need that. And I think that's something that we want to work on, because the churches I've seen where they can be just as crooked as the person who was given the responsibility to take care of it. And this, all this is done at the last minute, by the way. You know, you...
Right, because it's at need. It's at need. It's not something planned. And churches have changed, sir. It used to be, you know, you could have the church, you could have the service at the church, you could have the repast, and now, and not knocking churches, because it's a business too, but now you have to pay. You have to pay to use the church. You have to pay for the repast. It's a whole bunch.
Well, we're going to take
a whole lot has changed.
We're going to take a little musical break here, give you an opportunity to breathe, and we're going to come back and close this segment out. We're going to also bring your daughter on as well to talk more about the educational part of it, because, you know, the last thing you want is someone fooling around with the remains and it's not done professionally. So we're going to take a quick break.
Oh, well, you know what that is, before, and I'll let her talk on that, but before, we are very well trained. We have to pass a national exam, a board, before we even go do our practicals for our license. Each jurisdiction, I have Maryland and D.C., you have to do a practical first, and then you have to do an examination with human remains and one of law. So if you get that far, you should know something. Because it's a lot. It's not easy. Like I said, we have to take a national board exam that's given throughout the country before we even allowed to take the state examination.
Okay, well, we're going to be right back. This is KingScottRadioTV.com, and we're speaking with Ms. Beverly Jenkins, and she's giving us some much-needed education referencing the business of death. KingScottRadioTV.com. We'll be right back. All right, Ms. Jenkins, we're going to wrap it up here. We're going to come back and do some more with this particular topic, because, you know, we really need to educate ourselves as to what we need to do. So if you can just kind of close us out with just your last few words, and we'll be back on the air in a while to talk more about the business of death. And you can give us your address and your phone number again, please.
Excuse me. Well, first, again, thank you for having me this afternoon. Thank you for allowing me to spotlight Johnson & Jenkins. Johnson & Jenkins Funeral Home, 716 Kennedy Street Northwest, Washington, D.C. The phone number is 202-882-8800. And if you have any questions you want to ask, the email is J as in Joseph, F as in Frank, H as in Harry, @AOL.com. I happily answer questions, because I realize people, again, don't do this every day. So if I can be of any service or a guide along this very difficult time for people, I have no problem. If you have any more questions for me at any time, sir, please give me a call. If I can, if I don't know it, I'm going to find out who does.
Okay.
So I have no problem. asking any questions or trying to help people, again, along this journey, because it's not an easy thing to do. Not an easy thing.
Okay, this is KingScottRadioTV.com, and we thank you for your time. Boy, what an interview. Miss Beverly Jenkins is just a very good person. And I must tell you that my personal experience with her has been magnificent, simply because she handled my daughter's funeral. My daughter was married at age 28, and Miss Jenkins came in and just settled everything down. I'm in great debt to her for educating my family as to the ins and outs of what is best to do. And I credit her family history for being a professional. We're going to be also interviewing her daughter, and she is in the business of death as well. So we're going to find out more of the educational side of it, because people need to know that your loved ones are being handled properly. I vow to make sure that on this radio station that we bring as much clarity to this difficult situation as we can. I look forward to working with Miss Jenkins more and more, just in a consumer educational fashion. In the meantime, I want you guys to hold on. Everyone must go through this process, and it's good to know that there's still honest people in the business of death. This has been KingScottRadioTV.com, and we look forward to talking with you again. You can reach us at area code 240-362-7552. If you have any questions or if you need to get in touch with Miss Jenkins, you can do so through this station. She's in the Washington, Maryland area, the DMV as we call it, and she'll be more than willing to service you and educate you in the ways of the business of death. This has been KingScottRadioTV.com.